If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
In December 2013, 20-year-old Heather Elvis was going through a transitional period in her life. After an ill-advised relationship with a married man, she had just gone on a first date and was getting ready to start a new job. She was trying to make a fresh start and had plenty to look forward to in life. But in the early morning hours of December 18th, Heather's car was found abandoned at a remote boat landing in her hometown of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. She was never seen again. The investigation into Heather's disappearance revealed a complicated story. A secret affair, relentless harassment, and two people who would eventually be convicted of kidnapping her. But despite the arrests and trials, one devastating mystery remains. What actually happened to Heather Elvis? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Heather Elvis. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. So this is actually a very special case, a special episode, if you will. You know, I've known about Heather's story, but I hadn't really been following it. But I decided to do it now because there's a new three-part documentary series out about her case called Vanished, the Heather Elvis Story.
Awesome. Is that on Netflix? Can we watch it?
Okay, yes, we can watch it because I have the screener. But it's available on Amazon Prime and Apple TV. I was able to sit down recently with the director, Michael Baer, and talk about Heather and his series. We had a long discussion about the case, the people involved, and why he decided to make this the first story that his company, True Case Films, took on. That's going to be released the day after this is available on your podcast apps. But if you're a member of our Patreon, you can get it now. And that is a video as well. So I'm going to release the video on YouTube, but you can listen to it just, you know, the audio if you'd like as well, wherever you're listening to this.
The interview that you did.
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So he and I talked for about an hour and yeah, it was a really good conversation. And we got into, of course, the documentary and what made him do it, but really got into his impressions of the case and the people involved as well.
Oh, well, now I'm really curious to watch the documentary.
Yeah, no, it's really good. It's really good. Like I said, it's a 3-part documentary, and I was very impressed, which is good because I agreed to do the interview before I watched it. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, that would be really bad if you
like, what if this sucks?
Yeah, if it was like, oh, well, now I have to endorse this terrible documentary.
Right.
Well, it's good that it was well done.
Yes, I give like my official stamp of approval to it. So, and obviously I used a lot of it as source material for this episode because, you know, he put in months and months and months of work doing this.
I mean, you might as well. The research is already done.
Right, right. And, you know, of course it wasn't my only source, but he does a lot of interviews with Heather's family, with her roommate, and those really came in handy for this episode. So yeah, you can look for that tomorrow on all of the platforms, or it's available now on our Patreon. And speaking of Patreon, we would like to thank our newest Patreon supporters, Relax Your Head and Daphne. I mean, you don't have to put your real name on Patreon.
Thank you both so much, especially Relax Your Head.
Your support helps us keep the show going and helps keep these stories in the public eye. If you want to join them, you can head over to our Patreon and join at any level, starting at just $2 a month for ad-free episodes, a free copy of the ebook that I wrote, and early access to my interview with Michael Baer. Now, with all that out of the way, let's talk about Heather Elvis. Heather Rachel Elvis was born on June 30th, 1993, in Horry County, South Carolina. She's the oldest of two children and grew up in a close-knit family with her parents, Debbie and Terry Elvis, and her younger sister, Morgan. Even from childhood, Heather had a big personality. Her friends and family have described her as bold and full of life. She had a great sense of humor, a love of makeup and hair, and a natural flair for all things creative. After graduating from St. James High School in 2011, Heather moved out of her parents' house and into her own apartment in the Carolina Forest area of Myrtle Beach. She shared the space with her best friend and roommate, Brianna Worrellman. The two young women were like sisters. Heather was working multiple jobs, one as a hostess at the Tilted Kilt, a Scottish-themed sports bar, and another at the House of Blues. Do you remember the Tilted Kilt? We had one for a hot second at the mall by here.
No.
It's kind of like Hooters, but it's Scottish-themed.
Okay.
So instead of like crop tops and shorts, you wear crop tops and like a plaid skirt.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there was one here?
Yeah, there was one at the mall. It did not last long. But anyway, so that's where Heather worked. So it kind of gives you an idea of like where she was, what she was doing at the time. So while she was working there and at the House of Blues, she was also taking cosmetology classes and working toward her dream of working in beauty full time. Heather's younger sister, Morgan, has said that Heather wanted to be both in front of the camera and behind it. And she wanted to like control the look of everything she did, you know, so she really wanted to like control how the hair looked, the makeup, the clothes, you know, all of it. That's just the type of person she, you know, she was. Like many young women, Heather dated around a bit, but didn't really seem to be in any serious relationships. But that changed in the summer of 2013 when she met a man named Sidney Moore. Sydney was 37 years old.
Oh, and how old is she at this point? 19?
Yeah, 20. She turned 20 in the summer of 2013. So she had actually just, when they met, when this all started, it was like September. So she had just turned 20.
Okay.
So not only was he 17 years older than her, he was married with children. He worked as a maintenance technician for a company that serviced restaurant equipment, and he frequently came into the Tilted Kilt.
Yeah, this makes sense now.
Yeah. Their flirtation developed into a full-blown relationship, and Heather eventually confided to her roommate, Brianna, that she was seeing Sydney. It wasn't long before the relationship became known among their coworkers, because, again, a lot of this was kind of taking place, like, at the Tilted Kilt.
Right. People notice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And while some disapproved, Heather seemed smitten. Brianna talks about this in the documentary, and it's honestly one of my favorite parts because it's very real. Like, Heather was dating a dude who is 17 years older, and I'm sorry, ordinarily I would not say this, but my immediate impression as soon as, like, they put his picture up was like, ew. This guy was gross and creepy. Like, I don't understand. Heather was gorgeous. She's 20 years old. I don't get it. I do not get it. And neither did Brianna. And she made that very clear in her interview. So So she said she had no idea what Heather saw in this guy, but like, what are you going to do? You know?
Yeah. I mean, you're the best friend. You're there to provide a shoulder and an ear and, you know, you can give your opinion, but like,
yeah,
people are going to do what they're going to do.
Exactly. And so that's what happened. Now, I don't know what Heather's end goal was in this relationship. Like, I don't know if this is just, you know, something that she saw as temporary, if she thought that Sydney was going to leave his wife and kids to be with her, if that's even something she wanted. Like, I don't know what her end goal was or what ideas Sydney was putting into her head. But I mean, obviously, this is not a love that was meant to last. At some point in the fall of 2013, Sydney's wife, Tammy Moore, discovered the affair. And what followed was a campaign of harassment and control that dominated both Sydney and Heather's life. According to testimony from friends and family, Tammy confronted Heather directly and forced Sydney to break things off in a humiliating phone call with Tammy listening on the other end. Basically, Tammy made Sydney say horrible things to Heather and call her names during this breakup call.
Yikes.
And I don't know if Bree was there with Heather when she was on this phone call or if Heather just told her about it afterwards. But according to Bree, one of the things that Sydney said on the phone was, quote, "You were nothing to me. You were just someone who spread your legs," end quote.
Oh, Christ. Massive amount of shaming there.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's not coming from Sydney.
Right.
But still, I mean, holy shit. Like, yeah,
what a horrible thing.
Like, totally understand her being mad, obviously. But, like,
that's wild.
Yeah. To go to that level of shame.
Yeah. Oh, that's not it. Like, that's the beginning.
Oh, boy.
Now, listen, it's also important to know that, yes, this obviously came directly from Tammy. Like, that is not how Sydney viewed Heather at all.
Right.
Because he actually had reportedly gone so far as to cook up a plan where he and his family would move to Florida and Heather would also move to Florida and be their nanny.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I mean, this is disturbing on many, many levels.
Yes.
Like every angle.
Every angle is bad. So I, of course, cannot begin to understand what was going through the two brain cells knocking around in this man's head. But whatever this was between him and Heather, it was more than a hookup.
Yeah.
You know, you don't make insane plans like that for just a random hookup, you know?
Right. So there's obviously some feelings there.
Yeah, for sure. But Sydney breaking it off with Heather wasn't good enough for Tammy. So like that call, not enough. Even after that call, Heather received messages from Tammy directly that included taunts and even photos of Tammy and Sydney having sex.
Okay.
Like, it seems like it was very much a see, he really wants me, not you kind of move, I guess.
I guess. It's a weird way to assert your dominance.
I guess. Tammy also allegedly called Heather's work repeatedly in an attempt to get her fired. And Heather apparently like tweeted about this. She said something about how like she was sent home one day from the Twisted Kilt because like Tammy just kept on calling. And so her manager
would send her home. That's not her fault.
No,
I mean,
but I guess
in a roundabout
just,
way.
I guess it was just disruptive or whatever. And so her manager's like, listen, just go home for the night. We'll figure this out later. Now, this harassment went on for weeks, and just to give you a timeline, the affair apparently started in September, and Tammy found out about it sometime in October.
So not a long
affair.
Not a long time.
Yeah, we're not talking like years on end or anything. Then there was the breakup call, like that happened first, and then everything else happened, right? Like the texts, the phone calls to her work, all that. But on November 1st, Tammy was still going at it. She texted Heather a bunch of nonsense that ended with, quote, "Hey, sweetie, ready to meet the missus," end quote.
What?
Just threatening her and stuff and basically saying she's like going to beat her ass. And Heather responded, quote, "I think you're a little obsessed with me. I'm nobody you need to worry about anymore," end quote.
Yeah. So clearly, like, Heather's done. Like, she's like, this is nuts.
Yeah.
It was a mistake.
Right.
I'm out.
She's like, I don't need all this, you know? And so from what it seems like, you know, she and Sydney did end things. Heather still had feelings for him. You know, those didn't just magically go away. But this is clearly a very volatile situation that she was trying to remove herself from. When I was first reading all of this, you know, my thought and maybe a lot of your thoughts out there is, why is Tammy only mad at Heather?
Right.
You know?
That's why, like, when I was talking about her shaming Heather.
Right.
Shame your husband. But, like,
who was going after a 20-year-old?
Yeah, and be mad at the 20-year-old, sure, right. But she's 20.
Exactly. And yes, you have the right, like, to be mad at the 20-year-old who knew this dude was married.
Right.
Like, you know, that this wasn't a secret. This isn't like she met this guy online and he said he was single. You know, it wasn't a situation like that. Like, Heather knew what was going on.
Yeah, but to go to that level of shaming her and harassing her.
Like, oh, yeah.
This is, and you know, what's going on with Tammy and Sydney at that point? You know what I mean? Like,
right. And because Sydney's the one who made the vow to Tammy, not Heather.
Right.
You know? Well, Sydney did not get off scot-free. Tammy reportedly began controlling every aspect of his life. She changed his phone passwords and installed GPS trackers. But that was not the worst of it. She also made him get a giant tattoo of her name that stretched across his body right above his pelvis.
Oh, wow. And he went along with this.
Yes. So anytime he so much as took off his shirt, the first thing people would see was Tammy below his belly button.
Okay. I think Tammy needs some therapy.
Yeah. But even that wasn't enough for her. According to a later police interview that Sydney gave, he said that Tammy would handcuff him to their bed at night so he couldn't sneak out.
And again, he was just letting all of this happen.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the level of jealousy that we're dealing with.
I think you mispronounced crazy.
Now, Heather, for her part, like I said, she tried to move on. She started a new job at a local beauty salon and stopped responding to Tammy's harassment. But sadly, it does seem as though Heather still had lingering feelings towards Sydney, and those feelings eventually led to her downfall. Part of the reason that Heather wasn't able or willing to make a clean break from Sydney, despite all of the drama, was because she thought she might be pregnant. Heather had told several co-workers that she hadn't been feeling well, and Bree said in the documentary, Vanished, the Heather Elvis story, that Heather had been gaining weight and her boobs had gotten bigger. But from what it sounds like, by December, Heather wasn't 100% sure if she was pregnant or not. Or if she was sure, she hadn't really shared the news with everyone.
Okay.
So it's a little confusing as to exactly what she believed the status to be on December 18th. On the night of December 17th, 2013, Heather was caught between two worlds. Her logical side said that she needed to move on and put all of this craziness behind her, so she went on a first date, which I mentioned in the intro, You know, with a nice boy her own age, single, normal, like a good guy from what it seems like. And she seemed happy, you know, she was making plans, but there was still some sort of pull towards Sydney. And so when he called her, she picked up. And hours later, she was gone. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like, if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armour, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armour a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armour.style/ATTWG. That's armour.style, armour.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armour today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their Sleepy Time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. That evening, Heather went on a date with a young man named Stephen Schiraldi. The two drove around Myrtle Beach looking at Christmas lights before heading to an empty parking lot at Inland Square Mall, where Stephen gave Heather a quick lesson on how to drive his stick shift. And that's not a euphemism. Like, I don't want to make light of this, but I just saw your face when I said that. His manual transmission?
Whatever.
She took a photo of herself behind the wheel and sent it to her father and to her roommate, Bree, who was out of town for the holidays. Her father, Terry, later said in that documentary that she sent that to him because he had tried to teach her stick before, but she was horrifically bad at it. And so, like, he stopped because he was afraid that she was, like, going to destroy his transmission. So she sent him that picture as kind of like a jokey, like, aha, look at me now. It was a very, like, cute, fun kind of thing. But that photo would turn out to be the last known image of Heather Elvis. Stephen dropped Heather off at her apartment at around 1:15 a.m. on December 18th. Less than 20 minutes later, she received a phone call that changed everything. At 1:35 a.m., Heather received a phone call from a payphone located at a gas station on Joe White Avenue in Myrtle Beach. The caller was Sydney Moore.
So she picked up the phone because she didn't recognize the number.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was coming from Sydney's phone.
Right.
So when she picked up, it wasn't necessarily that she was picking up to talk to Sydney or expecting Sydney to be on the other
correct.
End.
Yeah. I don't think she would have had any reason to think that that might have been Sydney, other than maybe she thought that he wouldn't want to call her from his own number. So, like, sure, it could potentially be him. But, I mean, that is such speculation, you know?
Yeah.
So there are a couple ways to look at him using this payphone. One is he could have been doing it to try to avoid detection by Tammy, who, was controlling everything and could see everything by that point. Or he may have used a method of communication not tied to him for a much darker reason.
Right.
Now, after this call, Heather called Bree. And when she called Bree, who, again, she was, I believe, in Florida visiting family.
Okay.
So she was out of town. Heather was crying and was extremely upset on the phone. According to Bree, Heather told her that Sydney had called out of the blue and said he was leaving his wife and wanted to see her.
This sounds like a trap.
Brianna urged Heather not to do anything and to just go to sleep. Heather said she would and hung up just after 1:45 a.m. And that was the last time anyone heard Heather's voice. I don't know. I just think about, like, obviously the entire case is heartbreaking, but she was so close, you know, she was so close to being out.
Yeah.
She was so close to moving on. She had this really what seemed like a great first date. You know, she had this new job. Like, she was really just so close to just moving on to a completely new phase of her life, a very positive new phase in her life. And then this fucker just came in at 1:35 in the morning and ruined it all. Over the next 2 hours, Heather's phone records show a strange pattern. At 2:30 a.m., Heather called the same payphone number that Sydney had used to call her, probably not realizing that it had been a payphone, just thinking it was, you know, some random number, right? So, of course, nobody answered. Over the next hour, her phone pinged several times in different areas near her apartment. It appeared that she was driving, but it was unclear why or where she was headed. At around 3:15 a.m., Heather called Sydney's cell phone. He didn't answer. So I guess by that point, she was just like, well, might as well just call him directly, because if he's going to leave his wife, maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
By 3:25 a.m., her phone had returned to the area near her apartment. This time, when she called Sydney, he answered. They spoke for about 4 minutes. And immediately afterward, her phone began moving again, this time toward a remote area known as Peachtree Landing. Located on the Waccamaw River, Peachtree Landing is a boat launch surrounded by woods and water. It's not somewhere people would typically go in the middle of the night. But according to cell tower data, Heather's phone arrived there around 3:38 a.m. Between 3:38 and 3:41 a.m., Heather made several more calls to Sydney's cell phone. None were answered. At 3:42 a.m., all activity from her phone stopped. It was either powered off or destroyed. And that was the last digital trace of Heather Elvis. Unbeknownst to anyone at the time, a Horry County police officer happened to be patrolling near Peachtree Landing around 4 a.m., so not even 20 minutes later. At that time, he noticed a green Dodge Intrepid parked oddly at the landing. The engine was cold, the doors were locked, and no one was in sight.
Is that Heather's car?
Yep. Now, he made a note of this, but without a missing person report or any sign of criminal activity, he had no reason to do anything.
Yeah, I mean,
like, it wasn't business hours. I mean, it was parked oddly, like, perpendicularly in parking spaces. But, like, nobody was there. It wasn't open. It wasn't disturbing anything.
Yeah.
And it's not even worth, like, towing at that point, I feel like, at 4 a.m.
Right, right. Yeah, that's where I was going is, like, yeah. You know, I assume that the landing's probably closed after dark. So maybe he ticketed the car or something.
Yeah, I don't think he even did that. Yeah. I think it's one of those things. It's like, well, let's see if it's still there in the morning.
Yeah, when the towing companies are awake.
Right. And then maybe we'll do something about it. But like, there wasn't a bolo on the car. I'm sure he ran the license plate. Nothing came up. Yeah. Like, there's just no reason to do anything. But what's very interesting about this is that, again, it's less than 20 minutes after her last cell phone activity,
right,
or around 20 minutes after her last cell phone activity. And by that point, she was already gone. So basically, nobody knew that anything had happened to Heather. Like, nobody thought she was missing. But the next day, she didn't show up for work or answer her phone. But it wasn't really that raised a lot of red flags at the time. What raised the red flags is that day, the car was still there. And so that's when police were like, okay, whose car is this?
Mm-hmm.
And that led them to Heather's parents' house because the car was actually registered to them.
Oh, okay.
So that's when they found out that the car had been left at Peachtree Landing and it was locked and nothing was in it. So Heather's purse and phone were missing. There were no signs of a struggle, like nothing weird like that. The only thing weird was, like I said, the way that it had been parked perpendicularly, like somebody had left in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was normal. But once the car was there and nobody could get in touch with Heather, then obviously it became an issue. They reported her missing. Now, once Heather was reported missing on December 19th, 2013, Horry County Police launched a search and began interviewing her friends and family. And officers began retracing Heather's movements. So the initial focus was on the timeline, when Heather was last seen, who she had spoken to, and where her phone had traveled. Investigators obtained her phone records, which, again, I think they were able to do easily because I believe she was still on her parents' phone plan.
Right.
So that was like a very quick and easy process because they had permission.
They could just give permission, yeah.
Exactly. So they quickly discovered that early morning call from the payphone on Joe White Avenue. And then after that, all the phone calls to Sydney's phone and including the one where he picked up.
Mm-hmm.
So that, of course, led them straight to the Moore's house.
Right.
So the officers who are initially investigating the missing persons report stop by the Moore home, hoping to speak to Sydney. Now, he wasn't there, but Tammy and her father were. Tammy was calm, but according to officers, her father was angry and confrontational. He reportedly said, "I'll do anything to protect my daughter. Anything."
What the hell does that mean?
Well, nobody knew. And the officer was like, okay, like, he thought it was kind of weird as well. Because keep in mind, this is just an officer looking into a case of a missing 20-year-old.
Right.
Like, he probably didn't think anything nefarious had happened to Heather at this point.
Right.
He was basically just checking off boxes.
Yeah, he was retracing steps and wondering why she was calling Sydney's phone number.
Yeah. So he didn't know about this whole affair. He didn't know about, you know, all of the backstory about this. Like, he's just going about his job, right? And so he's met with this level of aggression that was very weird to him at the time.
Yeah. Obviously, there's people out there that just generally don't like talking to cops.
Sure.
But that specific type of aggression, like, I'll do anything to protect my daughter. Is like,
yeah.
What?
And, like, they weren't even here to talk to him.
Yeah, they wanted to talk
to
Sydney.
I don't even know who you are, sir.
Yeah, they weren't even there to talk to Tammy. Yeah. They were there to talk to Sydney.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's a little odd.
It was. And so, obviously, it stood out. As the investigation continued, they also had to talk to Steve, the guy that Heather had been out on the date with. He was, after all, the last person who was known to have seen her. His story checked out, though, and investigators quickly cleared him of having anything to do with Heather's disappearance. He just had the bad luck to go on a date with a woman who went missing just hours later. Which, poor Steve, like, ugh, God, right? That must have messed him up.
Yeah.
With Steven ruled out, focus shifted back to Sydney Moore, and he agreed to come down to the police station for an interview. Michael and I talk about this in our interview together, because I was like, that's wild that he just voluntarily went down there.
Maybe he was looking at it as a potential way out from Tammy's controlling
I mean, that's
behavior.
Interesting. To me, and, you know, again, this will kind of become clear later, and especially if you watch the documentary, I get the impression that both he and Tammy think that they're smarter than everyone else.
Mm.
And my personal opinion is that he went down there as, like, a way to control the situation.
Right. Clear his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Never a smart thing to do.
No. Never talk to the cops. So when police questioned Sydney, he denied calling Heather and claimed that he hadn't spoken to her in weeks. Right. So, like, right out the gate.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, generally speaking, cops don't go to talk to people without, like,
having
or interview
some
them
idea
without,
of yes, what's going on.
Having some sort of reason or evidence-based reason as to why they are questioning you. So, yeah, right off the bat, starting off with a lie. You're not going to win this one.
No. And which is so dumb because, like,
a verifiable lie.
Yeah. And what's wild to me is, I mean, yes, like, he knows that he talked to her on his cell phone.
Yeah.
He knows that cell phones can be traced. Like, he knows that would pop up. Like, that's a very easy thing to find out. Right.
Right.
But he also lied about the payphone because the cop is like, so what about a payphone? Have you used a payphone to talk to Heather lately? And the police officer obviously had a very good reason to ask that question.
That very specific question.
Right?
Yes.
And instead of saying, yes, I called her from a payphone the other night, and even saying something simple like, because I didn't want my wife to find out, which would make complete sense.
Yes.
Instead, he said, what? They still have payphones?
Well, under normal circumstances, that would actually be a valid thing to say because who has payphones?
Well, this is 2013. So, I mean, there were slightly more than there are now in 2025 as we're recording this.
But still.
He's specifically asking you about a payphone. And the reason why he's asking you, Sydney Moore, specifically about a payphone is because there was a surveillance camera by the payphone.
Oh, so you didn't say that before.
I know.
Okay,
I
so because I was thinking that maybe he didn't actually have anything to do with this and that was Tammy calling.
Yeah.
So there's video footage of him making that phone call.
But also, keep in mind, Heather called Bree right after that payphone call and said that Sydney called her.
Oh, right.
So the cops already knew, one, that Heather had told Bree that Sydney called her at 1:35 a.m. So they knew that. And then they had this phone call on her phone records that they traced to a payphone. So they went to, I think it was a gas station, and said, hey, do you have any tape from this time? They said yes, and they did. Now, the tape wasn't good. If they had nothing else, you couldn't look at just that tape with no other information and say, oh my God, that's Sydney Moore.
Right.
Right? But Sydney Moore didn't know that. So they just said, hey, buddy, we've got you on video making this phone call from this payphone at 1:35 a.m. Would you like to change your story? At which point he said, yes, I would like to change my story. I did actually call Heather, but I only called her to tell her to leave me and my family alone. Because obviously that's something you need to do at a gas station at 1:35 in the morning.
Yeah, after Heather had not contacted you in weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think by this point, authorities already knew about the relationship and, you know, the whole, because like I said, I think Bree was one of the first people that they interviewed, and Bree, of course, told them everything. So they knew about the harassment. They knew about the affair itself, like all of the crazy stuff, not all of the crazy stuff, but a lot of the crazy stuff. Right. And Bree and, you know, Heather's coworkers confirmed that Heather had been afraid of the Moores, especially Tammy.
Yeah, rightfully so.
Right. At this point, now they're trying to retrace Sydney's movements, see where he was other than this gas station making this payphone call. So during the course of that investigation, they discovered that at 1:15 a.m., just 20 minutes before he made the payphone call to Heather, Sydney had purchased a pregnancy test at Walmart.
Okay.
So police asked him, what's that about? And what he said is that it was for his wife. He said that he and his wife had been trying to get pregnant again, that night they went to Walmart to buy a pregnancy test. She was in the truck with him. She was waiting out in the car while he went into the store. And she later testified that after he came out with the pregnancy test, I don't know if this is before or after she took the pregnancy test, they then had sex in the back of his truck.
What's the relevance of that?
Not exactly sure, honestly, but that's apparently how that went down. And it had nothing to do with Heather. And they were doing great. He, you know, Tammy, Sydney, trying to have a baby, doing great.
While he's handcuffed to the bed.
Right.
In a non-kinky way.
Oh, we're going to get back to that later, unfortunately. So it's obviously not looking great for Sydney. But even more damning, surveillance footage later showed a black Ford F-150 truck, believed to be Sydney's, traveling toward Peachtree Landing around the same time Heather's phone arrived there. At 3:36 a.m., a camera from a nearby residence captured a dark truck heading toward the landing. At 3:45 a.m., another camera showed what appeared to be the same truck leaving the area. So everything's matching up with the timeline.
Yep.
By mid-January 2014, the case had gained local and national attention. People flooded social media with theories and accusations, and some even claimed to have insider information or leads. The documentary really goes into is the online aspect of this. There was so much online harassment involved in this. There are rumors started about the Elvis family. There were people who, or at least accounts, who accused Heather's father, Terry, of doing something to her. Some said that even her younger sister, Morgan, was involved, said that Terry had been abusing Heather. Like, I mean, just wild stuff. And I don't really get into it in this episode, but that's a whole other kind of subplot that they really delve deeply into in the documentary and is fascinating because it's something that we see in a lot of these cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting to see exactly how it all played out in this particular one. The other thing that really happened here is that a lot of the police interviews, the documentation of, you know, a lot of other critical elements of this case were leaked online. So like Brianna's police interview on YouTube.
How did people even get that?
Well, nobody's 100% sure, but skipping ahead a little bit, when you go on trial, you are entitled to discovery.
Yes.
So it is thought that somebody involved in the trial took the information that was given to the defense and disseminated it online, or at least disseminated parts of it online in order to make Tammy and Sydney look innocent, I guess.
Or to potentially taint the jury pool.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, so a lot of this was online. So the online aspect of this, like I said, something that's really delved into deeply in the documentary and was a huge aspect of this case. So meanwhile, while all this is going on and like Facebook's exploding, you know, the investigation, it's just kind of chugging along. On February 21st, 2014, just over 2 months after Heather vanished, authorities served a search warrant at the Moore home. And after several hours, Sydney and Tammy were both arrested. They were initially charged with obstruction of justice and indecent exposure due to sexually explicit photos found during the investigation. So I think that goes back to the stuff that Tammy had been texting to Heather.
Okay.
But those charges were just the beginning. Soon after, both Sydney and Tammy Moore were charged with the kidnapping and murder of Heather Elvis. In the spring of 2014, the state proceeded with the case. They were relying on circumstantial evidence, including phone records, surveillance footage, and testimony about the harassment that Heather had endured in the months leading up to her disappearance. The wheels of justice, however, moved slowly, especially in a no-body homicide with no forensic evidence. In finding Heather's car, they had potentially a partial crime scene, but extensive searches of nearby land and water hadn't turned up any physical evidence. And like I mentioned before, there's no sign of struggle at the car, so there's nothing in or around the car that really helped them out. So there wasn't blood, there weren't hairs, like, you know, anything like that, that really would have given them something to kind of hang their case on. After a solid 2 years of investigation, prosecutors weren't confident that they could get the murder charges to stick. As they explained to the Elvis family, they had only one chance with those charges, and if they couldn't get a conviction, that was it. Sydney and Tammy could never be tried again. So because of that, they wanted to keep the murder charges in their back pocket if and when they were able to uncover more solid evidence. In March 2016, prosecutors dropped the murder charges without prejudice, meaning that they could be refiled if new evidence emerged. They also dismissed the indecent exposure charges. That allowed them to focus entirely on the kidnapping charge, which carried a possible 30-year sentence. Prosecutors believed that by narrowing their case, they would have a better chance of conviction. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, but what evidence do they have of a kidnapping? You just said that they didn't have much or any physical evidence of a murder.
Right.
So what physical evidence did they have of a kidnapping?
Well, they don't have any physical evidence. They have all the circumstantial evidence. So what they were really doing was going with the history of harassment, the threats, and the phone pings, the fact that Sydney's phone kind of matched up with Heather's phone, the fact that he had been calling her that night, she had been calling him that night. The really big part was that surveillance video that showed the truck going toward Peachtree Landing and then coming out, and how that matched up with Heather's phone going off.
And just to backtrack a little bit, mm-hmm. We're assuming that the police searched that body of water at the landing,
yes,
right?
Yes, okay. Yes. And the land around it.
Yeah.
Sydney Moore was tried first. His initial kidnapping trial began in June 2016. Prosecutors presented a detailed timeline showing that Sydney had contacted Heather the night she disappeared, had lied to police about it, and that his truck was seen on surveillance heading to Peachtree Landing at the exact same time her phone arrived and went dark. They also called Heather's roommate to testify about the final phone call Heather made after hearing from Sydney, during which she had been crying and emotional. But despite this, the jury couldn't reach a unanimous verdict. 10 jurors voted to convict Sidney, but two held out, and the judge declared a mistrial. But after the mistrial, Sidney was held in contempt of court for giving an unauthorized interview during the proceedings, which violated the gag order. And it should be mentioned that this is one of the crazier aspects of this case. Sidney and Tammy would not stop talking.
I mean, from the prosecutor's side, that's actually good.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great for them.
Yeah. The more they talk, the more they're going to say something stupid.
Yeah.
More chances they have of them saying something stupid.
Yeah.
And like, they could slip up somewhere.
Sidney was constantly on the TV news, like boo-hooing about how unfair this all was. And Tammy's off on Facebook making completely unhinged posts and comments. So just to give you all an idea of like what was going on around this time, here's an excerpt from one of the interviews that Sidney did with WBTW in April 2016.
It's all a game. Everything's a game, and it's not a game. It never has been a game from the very beginning. The meanness that I've seen come out of people, it amazes me. How you can be so mean to someone you know nothing about a subject you know nothing about something that we did not do.
People are mean, huh?
People are mean.
Wow.
Yeah. And what's amazing.
He violated the gag order. Did he just go on?
And cry
and say people are mean to him.
Yeah. And what's wild about him, like literally crying on television about how mean people are, is that shortly after Heather disappeared, Tammy went on Facebook and made a post saying, and this is just one of her many, 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 many posts, saying, quote, Sidney cheated on me in the months of September, October with a psycho whore who has since went missing, end quote.
Way to incriminate yourself there.
Right.
A psycho whore. Meanwhile, like, you're posting things during a trial when there's a gag order.
Yeah, and she kept on going. Like, she did not stop posting on Facebook. So, okay, so he did this interview. He did interviews, and the court found that he did, in fact, violate the gag order because he very clearly violated the gag order. And he did serve a short jail sentence for that while he was awaiting his retrial in the kidnapping case.
Also, brother looks like a pug. Like, especially when he's crying, eyes bulging out. He does. He looks like a pug.
I can see it. The Facebook thing, though. Like I said, Tammy kept this up for years. And her Facebook comments also got her into hot water in 2017 for violating the gag order. Now, her goal with all of this, it seems, was to portray Heather as an unhinged homewrecker who had been stalking her family, which I guess is why Sidney had to make that phone call from at 1:35 from a payphone to tell Heather to stop contacting him, right?
Right.
So, like, I think that was, like, their way of explaining that phone call away.
But, I mean, God, these people are so fucking stupid. Like,
yeah,
there is evidence. There is actual evidence. Text messages don't go away. The phone records don't just disappear. They tell a different story.
Right.
It will clearly show that Heather was not the one calling them.
Yeah.
It shows incoming, you know, like messages
and
phone calls
Heather,
received versus.
Right. And Heather did call, you know, called Sidney several times that night.
That night, sure.
After he called her from the payphone.
Yes.
Not before.
Right.
She was off on a date. She was living her own life. And the Moores just decided they needed to get right back in and just stir shit up. In 2017, after the mistrial and the contempt of court charge, Sidney was tried on a charge of obstructing justice. This was related to his initial lies to police about not contacting Heather on December 18th. And now this was interesting because typically obstruction of justice charges, like, don't go to trial like this very often.
Right.
So even the fact that this, like, went to trial was a big deal. And it proved to be very damaging to Sidney because during this trial, Tammy's cousin, a guy named Donald, testified that after Heather's disappearance, Sidney Moore showed him something on a cell phone, indicating that Moore had more information about Heather's disappearance than what he told police. While this something wasn't disclosed at trial, like they didn't say exactly what it was, the something was later revealed to have been a photo of Heather Elvis, presumably dead, with blood on her shirt and scratches on her face. But this photo has never been found.
Mm. And this is Sydney's cousin saying this.
Tammy's cousin.
Tammy's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
In 2018, prosecutors brought a new charge against both Sydney and Tammy, conspiracy to commit kidnapping. That October, Tammy Moore went to trial for both the kidnapping and the new conspiracy charge. The prosecution's case focused heavily on motive: Tammy's jealousy, her harassment, and her threats toward Heather. Text messages and social media posts showed a pattern of anger and obsession. Tammy's behavior after the affair ended, including allegedly handcuffing Sydney to their bed, painting Heather as a stalker on Facebook, and sending threatening texts, helped prosecutors argue that she had a motive to make Heather disappear. Then, in a shining example of why defense attorneys often don't want their clients to take the stand, Tammy testified in her own defense.
Yes.
Claiming that she and Heather had made peace and that she wasn't upset about the affair.
Okay.
This was directly contradicted by Sydney's mother, who testified that when Tammy found out about the affair, she severely beat Sydney. It's also wild to me that Tammy had the gall to get up on the stand and testify under oath that she and Heather had had a, quote, nice conversation prior to her disappearance, and that they had buried the hatchet when she made a Facebook post after her disappearance calling her a psycho whore. Like, give me a break.
She's not smart.
This is the whole thing, right? So her whole defense is that she wasn't upset. She had no motive to harm Heather because, one, she wasn't upset about the affair in the first place. And two, they had buried the hatchet, which, why do you have to bury the hatchet if you're not upset in the first place? Whatever.
Contradictory.
The reason she wasn't upset in the first place, she says she and Sydney had an open relationship. And that she, you know, he found Heather. She found a boyfriend after this.
Okay.
So it was all good.
Yeah, sure.
All good.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they have mountains of electronic evidence that directly contradicts this idea of them having an open relationship. Easily accessible mountains of electronic evidence that can directly contradict this statement. Yes, she was still going for it. Also, remember when I said, unfortunately, we're getting back to him being handcuffed to the bed in a non-kinky way?
Yes.
According to Tammy, it was only in a kinky way.
Mm.
Okay. She said that, yeah, I handcuffed him sometimes, but only during sex. Never had anything to do with keeping him from sneaking out at night. And then also, yeah, sure, I made him get that tattoo. He wanted to get that tattoo, actually. And I did that even before this affair with Heather. This had nothing to do with Heather at all. And honestly, that part might be true. The tattoo might have come before the Heather thing, because in one of her like text messages to Heather, she said that she had had Sydney under surveillance. Again, why would you be surveilling somebody in an open relationship since January of 2012? So like way before everything with him and Heather started. So apparently this was not new behavior
mm-hmm.
for Mr. Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so she gets up. She's saying all of this. It's all objectively untrue, but her big deal that she wanted to get across in her testimony was her digital alibi. So again, she got on the stand, talked about how she was in the truck when Sydney bought the pregnancy test. It was for her. They had sex in his truck, and they had returned home long before Heather's phone stopped transmitting. And so she also detailed a minute-by-minute electronic alibi that she said proved she couldn't have done anything to Heather because she was home posting on Facebook at the presumed time of the disappearance. So like at 3:42 a.m. or whatever, when Heather's phone stops working, when that truck is seen driving, she's home on Facebook just bopping around.
Talking about how much of a whore Heather is.
Right. Yeah. But no, I think at that point, because she was a Disney like travel agent. Like, that was her job. She homeschooled their kids and was a Disney travel agent. So I think, if I'm remembering correctly, that at the time she was like doing travel agent posts.
Okay. Also easy to prove.
Sure enough. I mean, and she did. She had this detail. She's like, look, there's this post at, you know, X AM. There's this post. There's that, the other, you know, right? So she had that minute by minute alibi saying, I couldn't have had anything to do with this. And Michael Baer and I talk about this in our interview, and he does show a good amount of her testimony in the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really see why it did not go over well with the jury. She comes off as insincere and combative. The disdain and hatred that she had for Heather Elvis really comes through. Like, she could not hide that. And I think the jury saw it as well. So after just 4 hours of deliberation, the jury found Tammy Moore guilty of kidnapping and conspiracy to kidnap. She was sentenced to 30 years in prison for each count to be served concurrently, which is the maximum allowed under South Carolina law. Almost exactly 1 year later, in September 2019, Sidney Moore was retried. He chose not to take the stand.
Probably smart.
Yeah, like, he finally learned to shut up. But it didn't help him, because this time, instead of a mistrial, he was found guilty of kidnapping and conspiracy to kidnap. And like Tammy, he received 2 concurrent 30-year sentences. Neither Sidney nor Tammy have ever admitted guilt or revealed what happened to Heather. Both are in the process of appealing their convictions. In June 2023, the South Carolina Court of Appeals upheld both convictions, stating that the evidence presented at trial was sufficient and that the court proceedings had been fair. Both Moores appealed to the South Carolina Supreme Court, but their petitions were denied in 2024.
Yeah, because there's no reason to appeal. Just because you don't like the outcome of the trial doesn't mean you can, or
well,
that you,
I mean,
have
you can.
basis of a legitimate appeal.
Right, right.
Like, you appeal based on some technicality or something going wrong with the trial.
Right. And they did. And so in 2025, Sidney Moore filed a motion claiming ineffective assistance of counsel, which is usually like
that's
the first
different.
One.
Yep.
That's like your go-to, and made several unsubstantiated allegations, including that the trial was compromised by jury misconduct and that exculpatory evidence had been withheld. And again, unsubstantiated.
Yeah. What exculpatory evidence?
Right.
Sure.
As of this recording, that petition is still pending, but legal experts say the chance of it succeeding are slim. Both Sidney and Tammy Moore remain incarcerated. Tammy is currently housed at the Camille Griffin Graham Correctional Institution in Columbia, South Carolina. Sidney is at the Lee Correctional Institution. Tammy's projected release date is currently May 9th, 2043, and Sidney's is March 31st, 2044. But the most important question of all, what happened to Heather Elvis, remains unanswered. The trials and convictions of Sidney and Tammy Moore brought a sense of justice for the Elvis family, and it brought an end to a lot of the online harassment that they had been experiencing. But of course, it didn't bring closure. Because after all these years, Heather Elvis is still missing. There's been no confession, no recovery remains, and no definitive explanation for what happened to her in the early hours of December 18th, 2013. Each year, the Elvis family hosts a candlelight vigil at Peachtree Landing, the place where Heather's car was found. Her family has described these gatherings as painful, but also necessary, because it's a way to continue searching while reminding the world that Heather is more than just a headline. Over the years, there have been scattered searches and tips, but none have led to the discovery of Heather's remains. Her loved ones continue to hope that someone, somewhere, still knows something and that they will come forward. The Elvis family at this point has waited more than a decade for answers, and they firmly believe that the Moores hold those answers. Now, you came into the living room when I was finishing up the documentary and I was crying and you didn't even know what I was watching or like what was going on.
Yes.
So the part that I was watching at the time was Heather's family giving their final thoughts. Her father, Terry, talked about how he just wanted his oldest daughter back. He didn't care about punishment or justice anymore. He said that if it were up to him, he'd let the Moores walk out of prison tomorrow if it meant that he would just know where they put Heather. And that's the part that really got me because, you know, we place such an emphasis on the criminal justice system, right? And getting these convictions and putting people responsible behind bars. But it just really shows that it's the unanswered questions in cases like these that continuously re-victimize the families of missing people. The idea that in this case, two people, at least two people, hold the answers to what happened to their daughter but refuse to give them because of their own self-interest is just crushing to Heather's family. Eventually, though, the appeals will run out, and Tammy and Sydney are likely going to spend nearly the next 20 years in prison. Hopefully, one day their conscience will finally get to them and they can finally give the Elvis family some measure of peace. Heather Elvis has been missing from Carolina Forest, South Carolina, since December 18, 2013. At the time of her disappearance, she was 5'1" and weighed approximately 118 pounds. She had brown hair, green eyes, and a tattoo of a teal peace sign on the back of her right shoulder. Heather was 20 when she disappeared. She would be 31 today. If you have any information about the disappearance of Heather Elvis, please contact the Horry County Police Department at 843-915-5350 or Crime Stoppers of South Carolina at 1-888-CRIME-SC. You can remain anonymous. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And just as a reminder, you can see my interview with director Michael Baer on YouTube or listen to it on your favorite podcast app tomorrow, or head right over to Patreon today to see it now. And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.